The following is an audio recording of the impact of the word eternity. Collectively, these recordings form an audio history.
My name is Remo Dufray. I had a retail store on the corner of Crown and Oxford in Darlinghurst that traded there from 1988 to 1996. And Eternity, Arthur Stace, Martin Sharp's version of Eternity was very much part of our story in those early years. I think 1989 was probably when we approached Martin with a special idea to celebrate Arthur's eternity. I personally remember, I'm old enough that sometime in the 60s, I would have come across Eternity on the footpaths. I seem to recall in the Haymarket area, I may or may not have been with my whole family. We may or may not have been going to some kind of Christmas mass or something at one of the churches down there. And I do recall seeing Eternity on at least that one occasion, and potentially I think a few other occasions as well. Always intrigued me, didn't look into it because I was only a little boy. Well, I remembered it at the time because it was unusual, and I remember it after all these years for all the things that have happened related to Eternity since then. But, you know, it was striking in a sort of charismatic, interesting way. I don't think I asked too many questions about it at the time, but I clocked it, you know. No, I learnt the story when I opened the store, 1988. I would have been aware of Martin Sharp's homages to Eternity, and I would have cross-related that to my own experience with Eternity when I was a kid. So I would have known that there was a mysterious human being behind that word and its manifestation, but I didn't know the details of his life, etc. I lived in New York City. It was an interesting time to be in New York. There was the Andy Warhol and Keith Haring. I lived downtown. There was all of that. There was lots going on in the media. It was a little bit of a downer, actually, when I first came home. Everything seemed so less dense, but nothing really compared with Manhattan in those days. It's a long story. The short version is that I had all of these tertiary qualifications, a law degree, a commerce degree, an MBA from an Ivy League university, but I just wasn't ever going to be cut out for a corporate life. Tried it for about a split second when I got back from New York. Decided that the only way forward for me personally was to try to live a life of passion, and the only easy way to do that was to actually create my own world within which to have that life. So that meant finding a physical location wherein I would be able to surround myself with the things that reminded me of New York or my other travels or the cool things that were happening here in pockets within Sydney. And there was a shop on the corner of Crown and Oxford run by a gentleman, Mr. Zouglas, if I recall. And it was just a sort of a Greek five and dime kind of shop that had been there for a long time, selling that kind of stuff. It was just such a, even though it was full of stuff, you kind of see the bones of this space. And so that became the object of my obsession to create this passion palace within this repurposed Greek gift shop. I probably not the best person to ask that. It's probably better to ask people who felt that, but I didn't have experience as a retailer. I had experience as a communicator. I studied communications management in my MBA. I was very much interested in that side of things. And so I approached retailing as a communications media kind of company. And it, for me, it was more about the story and less about the molecules that you were selling. So for me, if we could tell a story with authenticity and clarity, then people would kind of want to buy those things as souvenirs of the storytelling bit. So it was like an inversion of the typical sell stuff philosophy. So I think maybe it was the spirit within which it was founded is what made it unique. Also, in those days, Darlinghurst was a very interesting, and still is, but interesting place. There were squats, at the Sergeant's Pies, Sergeant Pie factory here on Burton Street. There were jewellers and photographers and sculptors in there. I think Mark Newson, you know, had a studio in there. There was a lot of contemporary energy bubbling just below the surface. And so when my store opened, one of its departments was contemporary design. So it became a platform for the local contemporary energy and artisans. And so it was like a physical Etsy, if you like. So this was the Etsy of the 80s, was the Remo General Store. So we were developing our own product, and very much the philosophy of the product was anti-disposability, more about buying higher quality, premium quality once and then owning it forever. So there was this kind of quality focus and anti-disposability message and anti-decoration message. In parallel to that, we had this very prominent display window on the corner of, on the Crown Street side of the corner, 5 metres long, that we used to turn over every 2 weeks with a different message or graphic. And I had long wanted to involve Martin Sharp in doing something. I had met Martin, you know, some years before, and I thought it would be great to celebrate his skill, creativity, with some idea there. So that was like two of the planets, and then the third was this knowledge about Arthur's eternity and how it would be a nice story to tell in the store, and what merchandise could we develop to manifest the telling of that story. And so these three things were swirling around, and they all kind of came crashing together over one afternoon at Wirion at Martin's place, where we were talking about, what idea have you got for the window? We've got to do something with about, you know, eternity one day. You know, can you help me propagate the Remo General Store message of eternal quality and buying things once and owning them forever? And it all kind of came together, and, you know, Martin grabbed the marker pen from out of my hand and sort of scrawled the Arthur's Eternity across this bit of paper template that I used to carry around of that Crown Street window. So really it started with an idea for the window, and then it turned into like a major promotion in 1989 that we sort of just threw everything at, you know, to develop merchandise, to tell a story, to create editorial in the catalogue that we sent to people at Christmas time. I would have been an admirer of his from his early work, the posters he did for the Nimrod Theatre, all of that stuff. I don't think I would have made contact with him before I went to live in the States, but maybe shortly after I would have found some pretext to go and see him. I think I was designing T-shirts at the time, and maybe I was showing him some of my designs, and he tolerated me. Then when I opened the store, there was a more natural reason for us to know one another, because he was into the popular culture and I was into, you know, manifesting it in the retail space. Oh, well, critical because the Arthur's handwriting is not really owned by anybody. It's, you know, it's Creative Commons kind of word. But we commissioned Martin to do a particular version. I bought the 5 meter canvas from wherever it came from and had it delivered to Martin's place, and then we set a deadline, and then I would go there, you know, once a week, a la, you know, Michelangelo, or the Pope waiting for Michelangelo to actually get his shit together and finish this thing. And, you know, each week it, you know, another layer of paint, another layer of paint. But, you know, it wasn't blowing me away until, like, literally 2 days before he had this idea to supplement the white, supplement the yellow lettering with these white stars, which gave this depth of field around the word. And then, so that got delivered into our window, this big, huge 5 meter canvas, which ended up with the Sharp family, I think. Well, the first question, why would they come to the store? It wasn't so much to buy stuff, it was actually to dwell and gather. And, you know, we had a cafe downstairs, it was a meeting place, a cultural, it was a celebration of our local culture, but also international stories. And you know, Keith Haring was like a, you know, we represented him. So his work was in the store, other artists from around the world. It was just kind of the place you would go and gather if you were local, or even if you were out of town. We had people say that it was the first thing that they did when they got off the plane. You know, they would get a taxi almost before they dropped their bags off to come in and sort of hang out, grab some coffee, be with the people. So Martin would have been a customer of the stores. He would have come in. He would have come to our, we used to have openings every month in our gallery, which would celebrate or one thing or another. We had architects design trolleys. We had different furniture designers from Melbourne. We had jewelers from Brisbane. It was a kind of a contemporary design gallery as well as everything else. It was everything at the same time. Well, it's, you know, we made it the cover of that year's catalogue. It was the hero merchandise for that year. It generated a lot of vibey, happy, smiley media heat. The message just dovetailed perfectly with the messages we were trying to communicate through the permanency and quality of the stuff that we were promoting for people. So it was really a triple win. You know, there was no downside.
Yeah. Well, some people said to me, when I say, we're chatting with Remo, they go, the guy who had Eternity at the Remo store. Mm-hmm. That's the way some people remember it.
Yeah, it was a pretty significant, maybe the most significant thing we did on that corner.
Yeah, and so here we are 30 years later, people still remember it. How does that make you feel?
Pretty good, actually. You know, there are times where I haven't felt good about what I felt was like a premature disruption due to sort of self-imposed, bad management reasons. But, you know, the store was super influential, super successful at many levels, and unsuccessful in an operational, financial way. It's kind of like you need both, actually. I learned that lesson hard in those early days. You know, there was a T-shirt, there was a key ring, there was swimming cap. There was a few, you know, fun different things, a few fun different ways that we. And I used to periodically take an armload of stuff to Martin by way of royalty for his work, and he would give them away to friends. It was of this place. It was a very kind of Sydney thing to do. I'm not sure I've thought about it much harder than that. You know, it's like we were selling thousands and thousands and thousands of T-shirts, so they were a bit of a kind of a staple in those days. So I think maybe our best-selling design in those days was a quote from Albert Einstein, imagination is more important than knowledge, which is kind of somewhat gratifying that that was a big seller. So some things came and went. The loved ribbon was another design, but this but the Eternity one has had legs over the decades, and we still sell Eternity merchandise online. Well, it's in the nature of the word, right? If anything's going to last, it's Eternity merchandise. I'm sorry to crack that joke. So the Eternity story was one of dozens of stories all sort of mashed up together into a big soup that that communicated the personality of the brand at the time and communicated the spirit of what it was to be a customer of this brand and in a community of customers who shared values as manifest by the attributes of the things that were presented in the store. After the mural left the window, there wasn't a lot of places that we could put it, so it ended up living on the ground floor of the store on the Oxford Street level for I'm just trying to think of how many years. 5 or 6 years. There was nowhere else to put it. So it was there, looking over us for all that time. That was the breaking story. That was the catalogue layout, and it had the big mural. It had Martin's story about how he first came across Eternity. It had a little side panel describing my visit to Martin's studio and how the whole thing came about. It had excerpts from the newspaper when Arthur was sprung, showing that photograph from the Sunday Telegraph or whatever it was. So it was the whole story on a double page spread with the merchandise in the bottom right hand corner. You know, click to order here. Well, pre-click, right? Remember this number and put it in the order form. I saw it on telly living in New York, yeah. And it was terrific. It was very uplifting. I wasn't at a party. I was at home watching with Melanie and our 5-year-old, you know, and it was like, oh, great, perfect. Not surprising, but perfect.
So you saw it in the year 2000 on the bridge from
New York, yeah.
Yeah. So how did you feel? Because this is something that you had championed in Sydney.
Yeah. Well, I felt proud, a little sad that I was not here for it, not here to experience it with everyone else, a little bit of FOMO there, but mostly proud and gratified that I had made a contribution to the culture, which was kind of what had always driven me anyway, to make a contribution to the culture. And still does. Yeah, well, I feel proud to have made a contribution to that story and been part of it. And, you know, there was the Susan McKinnon movie at the time. That was in 1994, I think. It felt good. Definitely add that to my kind of list of things that I'm most proud of. Sydney is an aggregation of many stories and histories and First Nations people, and I think that is an ingredient that has created the flavour of Sydney, and I think if it was missing, it would be a different flavour. So I think the answer is yes, it would be a poorer, less flavoursome place without that nugget of a story. Yes, well, that made it all the more relevant for us to celebrate it, the fact that it was just around the corner. And it was just across the road from all of these communities of artists who, you know, some of whom ended up, you know, making triangular eternity key rings for me, which we sold in the store. So very circular. You know, I got to learn little bits and pieces of the story, as I'm sure you have, in making this film. But the fact that it was written inside that bell was a great, you know, great little added extra. It's one of those stories that will never go away and will, in waves, become known to each generation somehow. You're contributing to that yourself with this movie. Well, it's just so poetic, you know, the whole notion of someone doing something for so long in secret, and the backstory is, the backstory is a killer. You know, backstory, the down and out guy falling to his knees and writing something in a script that he'd never, you know, been able to replicate or do before. So it's got everything. It's got backstory, it's got grit, it's got redemption, it's got permanence and persistence and romance and happy endings and everything. The emotion that Eternity evokes in me is familiarity, you know, because it's just been part of my life for, 30 years, so more than half my life. The Remo General Store still sells online. About a month ago, I ran a Facebook ad for the first time. I was canoeing or kayaking with some guy up on the Hawkesbury River who's selling sort of budget hearing aids, and he was saying, I ran this Facebook ad, it did really well, and I sold a whole lot of hearing aids, and I went, oh, gee, maybe I should try that again. I hadn't done it for years, and I ran a little Facebook ad for Stripey Things, which is like a boat neck striped top that we sold, and it kind of worked a treat. And so the week later I thought, well, what other product could I try out? And I tried out the Eternity T-shirt on men on a white background, or women on a black background, and ran that ad. And sure enough, we sold Eternity T-shirts. So it was like, oh, okay, so... I guess people just don't know that we're out there, so I should probably do a better job of letting them know.
Were you surprised that the Eternity resonated with people?
Not really, which is part of the reason why I used it as a test, because I thought, all right, if anyone's going to remember anything, it's going to be this one. Got to get into the next generations. Arthur, I love your work. I love what you're doing. It's great. But have you tried different coloured chalk? No. Wouldn't say that. I've got no advice for Arthur. I think he doesn't need it from me. I think he lived a good and meaningful life.
Subscribe below to find out more about the audio recordings and to be kept up to date when more are made available.